Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, your host for this week's show. Today, we're taking a deep dive into an emerging market for canola growers in Canada, renewable diesel. For years, a small portion of Canada's canola crop has been used to make biodiesel. But now, Imperial Oil, Federated Co-op, and other players are planning to build refineries that produce renewable diesel from canola oil, animal fat, and other feedstocks. Renewable diesel plants have already been built or will soon be constructed in the US, Europe, and elsewhere, creating a new market that will require millions of tons of canola every year. This is all happening because governments around the globe are encouraging or mandating the use of low-carbon fuels to reduce emissions from planes, trains, and automobiles. We will get to renewable diesel in a minute, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.
Before we dive into the topic of renewable diesel, we should probably explain how it's different from biodiesel. Earlier this year, I spoke with Doug Cole of True North Renewable Fuels, a company based in Calgary. Doug provided this definition of renewable diesel.
So biodiesel was kind of the first generation of a green distillate fuel. And it was made by taking animal fats or canola oil and reacting it with methanol. And that made a product called methyl ester. And it's think of methyl ester as being like diesel fuel laced with oxygen. And there's some limitations when you do that, limitations in winter use. It tends to degrade pretty quickly, and there's blending limits with it. Renewable, on the other hand, we take the same feedstock, but we react it with hydrogen. And it produces hydrocarbons just like diesel or jet fuel, but it doesn't have that same limitation. But because it's a biosource, then it's a low carbon fuel, because the CO2 that gets produced when you combust the fuel goes back in and gets photosynthesized by the plant into the oil that the plant produces. So it's a low carbon fuel, but it's much more like a regular fossil fuel from your engine's point of view.
As Doug mentioned, renewable diesel is known as a drop-in fuel, meaning it could completely replace conventional diesel that is burned in trucks, tractors, trains, and combines. That replacement isn't going to happen overnight, but renewable diesel could soon become a sizable portion of the fuel market, says Ian Thompson, the president of Advanced Biofuels Canada. Can you sort of give me a sense of how much diesel fuel is used in Canada, and perhaps looking ahead, where renewable diesel could fit into that? Could it be like 10% of the market? Could it be 15% or 20%? Like, what's possible here?
Yeah, so we, in Canada, we use about 28 billion liters a year of blended diesel. The Western provinces tend to be more heavy diesel because of our agriculture and extraction industries than we are in Central and Eastern Canada. And of that, we're using about 385 million liters a year of renewable diesel and 329 million liters a year of biodiesel. And I'm getting those figures from the Biofuels in Canada report that exists on our website. Navius Research in Vancouver does that every year, and it's a comprehensive database. And we also just put up on our website, which is advancedbiofuels.ca, a new section of the site called the Canadian Transportation Fuels Dashboard, and that is a great kind of one-stop spot where anybody can go and look at exactly that kind of question. So we use you know, 28 billion liters. What's a realistic goal for renewable diesel? Well, we can look at in other places, but we can also look to what Environment Canada is. I'm going to be careful, not projecting, but they're suggesting this part of a compliance scenario for the clean fuel standard is that by 2030, we would have about 11% blending in the clean fuel standard, and that would be across the country. That's about 3 to 4 billion liters, and that's very realistic.
The market share of renewable diesel should grow in the next decade due to government mandates around low carbon fuels. One mandate is Canada's clean fuel standard, a national program that is expected to take effect at the end of 2022. Sean Pratt, a reporter with The Western Producer, has written about the standard and what it could mean for Canada's canola industry. Sean spoke with me from his home in Saskatoon. Hey Sean, thanks for coming on Between the Rows, I appreciate it.
Hey, no worries.
So last winter, you wrote a story for The Western Producer. And the headline of the story was Clean Fuel Standard Promises Canola Boom. So obviously I take that to mean that this new fuel standard that's supposed to come online, I think at the end of 2022, really could boost demand for canola. Like, what did you hear in the story from some of the experts? How big a demand increase are we talking about?
Well, it's substantial. The government modeling under that clean fuel standard shows that that the amount of biofuel content in diesel could increase to 11% by 2030. So that's up from today's levels of 2% for national mandate. So that's a massive increase. And in fact, the Canola Council of Canada has said that it could represent a market the size of Japan for Canadian canola growers. And Japan has traditionally been one of our largest markets for canola. Okay. So you hear those kind of comments and those kind of numbers, and it's, this is a substantial potential new market.
Okay. So the number I'm seeing here in your story is something like possibly maybe like 2 million new tons of demand every year. I mean, that's about 10% of all the canola we normally produce. That's huge.
It is, and it's a backyard market, which a lot of people in the canola industry would appreciate, given all the problems we've had in foreign markets like China, where, you know, China basically shut all canola exports from Richardson and Viterra, shut those down, and due to political spat between the countries. So, you know, that shows how vulnerable you are when you're relying on export markets. So there is a lot of keen interest, I guess, in developing a domestic market for canola, especially one that would be this robust.
Okay. So let's just shift away from Canada and then down to the U.S. for a second. So obviously there are big plans down there to build out renewable diesel capacity, or I guess maybe shift over some traditional petroleum refineries to canola or soybean oil or whatever it might be and use that as feedstocks. I'm looking at a chart here that you provided to me looking at projections, and the numbers are quite staggering. It basically just like a huge increase over the next like 4 or 5 years. Can you just talk about some of the numbers or projections down in the U.S.?
Yeah, this is a chart that's been trotted out by Seth Meyer, who is the chief economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And they're showing that when you combine sort of existing capacity with capacity that's currently under construction, and then layer on top of that some further proposed or announced plants, they're talking about 5 billion gallons per year of U.S. renewable diesel production capacity by 2024. So that's not that far away, 3 years down the road. 2021, that number, that total, is about 1 billion gallons per year. So, you know, they're quintupling the production capacity over the next 3 years. And Meyer was saying that one thing to keep in mind about this is that these plants are going to be built by the big oil companies. They're going to put them in, you know, attach them to the existing refineries that they have. And he noted that that changes the whole political dynamic about their opposition to biodiesel and renewable diesel. So suddenly they'll be on board with it rather than opposing it. And that is a big deal south of the border.
Right. Just to jump in here for a second. So the point being is that before there was sort of this tension between the traditional petroleum industry and the ethanol biofuel sector, that they didn't really get along. But this, what you suggest, you know, in terms of, that turns out to be a real shift. That's a big change, as you noted.
Yeah, in the past, they've seen the industry as sort of cannibalizing their sales. But now they would, since, you know, they would own a lot of these plants, they would be, you know, seeing it as an ally and an industry that they would like to support.
That was Sean Pratt, a reporter with the Western Producer in Saskatoon. One massive opportunity for renewable diesel is aviation fuel, a global market worth more than $400 billion annually. David Bressler, a professor at the University of Alberta, has helped develop technologies to convert animal fat and vegetable oils to jet fuel. He said batteries and electric power may make sense for automobiles, but renewable fuels are a better fit for planes, ships, and trains. I spoke with David in late September.
When you look at road transport, there's options that people are trying to develop. So you're looking at things like electrification, hydrogen cars are always being discussed and under development. But really, the primary option for a traditional combustion engine is still going to be the biofuels themselves. So that's kind of what's happening in that space. But when you look at some of the other transportation fuels, primarily being marine, aviation, and rail, electrifying those on long distance transports is a much bigger obstacle and isn't seen in the next while, especially aviation. That, you know, when they build or buy a plane, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. Those engines are expected to run for 35 years to recoup the investment in them. They can't really drop all the engines off the planes and retrofit them immediately to do something else. So the aviation industry especially is desperately looking for ways to reduce its carbon footprint, and the kind of biojet is one of the key opportunities there.
Okay. So can you just give me an example of how much emission reductions could be achieved with a renewable or sustainable aviation fuel? Like, are we talking 50% reductions or higher, or?
Well, there's eight pathways that have been certified so far going through the different regulatory systems globally. And they range on what they reduce, but some of them, like the one we're working on here at U of A, it's been benchmarked out at about a 85% reduction. And then some of the other ones are a little bit higher, a little bit lower than that in terms of percentage reductions, but I can't speak to them exactly.
Okay. So in terms of feedstocks to produce the renewable fuel, are we talking about mostly animal fat, oilseed crops like canola, or what are some of the potential feedstocks or major feedstocks for your process and the other processes being developed?
Well, and really there's three options here. There's the immediate best, there's available and okay, and then there's long term. So the immediate best, at least for technologies like ours, is looking at, you know, their animal rendering greases, et cetera, the more contaminated oils. Primarily they're lower cost, and some of the technologies like ours are pretty robust converting them, so it's no problem. So you want cheap and readily available. The issue becomes getting very, very large global scale volumes. There's a limited amount of that. The next up the list, which is immediately available and okay, I would say, is things like off-grade canola. You don't want to get into the food ecosystem. You want to avoid food versus fuel. But there's lots of lipids traded or oils and fats traded in the marketplace that are not really in that food-grade window. If you have a bad year in the Peace Country here in Alberta and they're not top-grade canola, this gives another opportunity to move down that space and do the volumes. And then the third option that's out there is under development, is more of the single cell algal stuff. There's companies in Canada and the US that are moving this technology forward. It's a few years out, but you're looking at large scale fermenters or raceway ponds that convert sunlight into oils and fats that are up to 70-80% of the cell mass. So that gives you, you know, a direct way of using non-productive land to produce a bunch of oils and fats for industrial use.
So just to reiterate what you just said there, so in the shorter term, animal fats, oilseed crops that are not really suitable for food grade, but like looking ahead 40, 50 years, we'd like to move beyond that. That would be the goal.
Hopefully it's more like 10 years.
10 years. Oh, okay.
Like they're scaled right now. They're just trying to reduce the operational costs. There's some strains out there right now that are commercial, but primarily right now they're being used to make omega-3 for the nutritional supplement space. So that's a certain volume. But as they get the cost of production down, it opens up these kind of avenues for application.
Okay. So what goes through my mind then is that if I'm a farmer in Western Canada growing canola, looking ahead 25 years, the aviation fuel space or renewable aviation fuel space may not be a massive market for me as a grower if the technology moves forward.
Now we're speculating for
okay.
sure in a big way. My personal belief is that I don't think the jet fuel application is going to ever compete with canola one going into the food place for price. So the canola market going into food is very well established and valuable. I think the off-grade canola, though, is still probably, at least from estimates, is still going to be cost-effectively competitive with what they're talking about in the single-cell algae world. So I would just view it as a long-term potential hedge market, if that makes any sense.
Okay. So just shifting our conversation to the U.S. for a second. So I'm sure you know this, that the Biden administration has set a goal of 100% renewable aviation fuels by 2050. I mean, that's not that far away. What goes through your mind when you hear something like that? Do you think that's reasonable or feasible?
Well, governments the size of the U.S. can make anything reality if they're willing to put unlimited resources behind it. It's an ambitious goal. It's not impossible. But it would take a long-term dedication through multiple administrations and a consistency of path. I don't think history has shown that any government in a democracy has that kind of linear consistency to a path. So technologically, economically, it's probably feasible. Politically, I wouldn't bet one way or the way the U.S. politics works.
Fair enough. But from a technological standpoint, if we're willing to dedicate the resources and time, it is something that's achievable. We could get away from fossil fuels when it comes to aviation.
I think so. I think there's several technologies competing into that space. And in 50 years, you're opening up some of the window time frame for some of the other technologies I mentioned earlier. Electrification will be somewhere in a different place by then. And who knows what power sources we'll have in 40 years. I wouldn't want to bet.
This last one here. So obviously you and others are working on technologies when it comes to renewable aviation fuel in Canada. How is Canada positioned, you know, globally when it comes to like cutting edge technology? Like, could we become a major refiner or producer of aviation fuel, say 5, 10, 15 years from now? How are we looking in terms of our technological advantage?
Well, the way you've asked the question, there's basically two questions wrapped in there, I think. The first question is, you know, our technological capabilities, our universities. On one hand, we're one-tenth at least the size of the U.S. in terms of the infrastructure. But that being said, we have technologies that are emerging, getting tens of millions of dollars of investment, and really holding our own more than what you'd expect in that space. So technologically, I think our ecosystem supported it very well. In terms of the industry, I think we're in a wonderful place. The U.S., like we said, is 10 times more people, 10 times more market. But in terms of the ability to produce bio-based feedstocks, Alberta's a big country with a lot of agricultural and forestry production capacity. And so as the world starts developing these technologies, I spent the last 20 years working at the interface between ag forestry and what we would call bioindustrial, which is how do we convert these things to valuable chemicals, fuels, and materials. Canada will always have a role. The question will be, you know, if we're not wise, we may end up as hewers of wood and drawers of water, and we're just really good at exporting raw commodity. If we capture the opportunity, we could get more of the value-added upgrading of our feedstocks so that we're selling more middle or final products to the global marketplace.
You've been listening to David Bressler, a University of Alberta professor who studies sustainable aviation fuel. That's it for this week's show. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about renewable diesel, check out our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search for Between the Rows podcast, and you'll find our renewable diesel video.
Part of being a farmer is being an accountant and a mechanic and a chemist. You have lots on the go. So FarmLink makes your grain marketing go further. We help you reach your financial goals with calculated sales decisions. No bias, just solutions and results. Plus, with our new app GrainFox, we bring every opportunity right to your fingertips. Literally. Start seeing the returns that'll get your family ahead. You've earned it. FarmLink. Your work is worth more. Get started at farmlinksolutions.ca.